Miller is standing over me, his hands in the pockets of his pants. I sit up on the bench, straightening out my dress so that it covers my thighs. I'm surprised to see him. He's wearing a suit, black on black. I feel terrible that my body can somehow feel this much grief, yet be sparked with a twinge of attraction as soon as Miller is in my presence. I use my palms to wipe tears from my face. Hi. He presses his lips together and looks around, like this is as uncomfortable as I fear it is. I wanted to stop by, see how you were doing. I'm not doing well. Not at all. I want to tell him that, but the only thing that comes out of my mouth is, I don't want to be here. I'm not asking him to take me anywhere. I'm just being honest about what I'm feeling this very moment. But he nudges his head toward the parking lot.
Then let's go.
Miller is driving the old blue truck that was sitting in front of their house the day I dropped him off. I don't even know what kind of truck it is, but it's the same color of blue as the sky is right now. The windows are down, so I'm guessing his air conditioner no longer works. Or maybe he just likes to drive with the windows down. I pull my hair up and tie it in a knot so it'll stop blowing in my face. I tuck flyaways behind my ears and then rest my chin on my arm as I stare out the window. I don't ask him where we're going. I don't even care. I just know that with every mile he puts between me and the funeral home, I feel more and more pressure release from my chest. A song plays, and I ask Miller to turn it up. I've never heard it before, but it's beautiful, and has nothing to do with any of the thoughts I'm having, and the singer's voice is so soothing it feels like a bandage. As soon as it ends, I ask him to play it again.
I can't, Miller says. It's the radio. Truck is too old for Bluetooth.
What was the song?
Dark Four-Door by Billy Raffool.
I liked it. I look back out the window just as another song begins to play. I like his taste in music. I wish I could just do this all day, every day. Ride around listening to sad songs while Miller drives. For some reason, sadness in music eases the sadness in my soul. It's like the worse the heartache in a song is, the better I feel. Dramatic songs are like a drug, I imagine. Really bad for you, but they make you feel good. I wouldn't know. I've never done drugs before, so I've never tested that particular comparison. I've never even been high. It's hard to do normal, rebellious teenage things when you have two parents who overcompensate for the mistakes they made when they were teenagers.
You hungry? Miller asks. Thirsty?
I pull away from the window and turn to look at him. No. I kind of want to get high, though. His eyes move swiftly from the road to me. He smiles a little.
I'm sure you do.
I'm serious, I say, sitting up straighter. I've never tried it before, and I really want to get out of my head today. Do you have any weed?
No,
he says. I sink back into my seat, disappointed.
But I know where you can get some.
10 minutes later, he's pulling up to the local movie theater. He tells me to wait in the truck. I almost tell him never mind, that it was just a random thought. But part of me is curious if it'll help with the grief. I'll try anything at this point. He walks into the theater, and less than a minute later, he's walking out with a guy who looks a little older than us. Maybe in his 20s. I don't recognize him. They walk to the guy's car, and within 15 seconds, cash and weed are exchanged. Just like that. It seems so easy, yet fills me with a nervous energy. It's not legal in Texas, and even if it were, Miller is only 17. Not to mention, he has a brand new dash cam in this old truck. I'm positive the dash cam didn't catch the transaction, but if he were to be arrested right now, the police would search his truck and probably watch the video and hear that the drugs are for me. My knee is bouncing nervously when Miller climbs back into his truck. He drives to the side of the movie theater and faces the road so that we can see the entire parking lot. He pulls a baggie out of his pocket. There's an already rolled joint in it. The truck is so old, it still has one of those built-in cigarette lighters. He pushes it in to heat up, and then hands me the joint. I stare at it, unsure of what to do with it. I look at Miller expectantly.
You aren't going to light it for me?
He shakes his head.
I don't smoke.
But you have a dealer. Miller laughs.
His name is Steven. He's my co-worker, not a dealer. But he always has weed on him.
Well, shit, I didn't think I'd have to do it myself. I've never even lit a cigarette before. I pull out my phone and open YouTube. I search for how to light a joint and start playing a video.
YouTube has weed smoking tutorials? He asks.
Shocking, I know. Miller is finding this amusing. I can tell by the expression on his face. He scoots closer to me and watches the video with me.
You sure you want to get high? Your hands are shaking.
He takes the phone from me.
It would be rude to change my mind now. You already paid for it.
Miller continues holding the phone for us. When the video is over, I pull the lighter out of its socket and stare at it hesitantly.
Here, I can try.
I hand it to him, and he lights the joint as if he's a pro. Kind of makes me question his initial claim. He inhales once, then blows the smoke away from me out his open window. He hands it to me next, but when I attempt to inhale, I just end up coughing and sputtering through the whole thing. I'm not nearly as graceful as he was.
If you don't smoke weed, how come you did it so easily?
He laughs.
I didn't say I've never tried it. I've just never lit a joint before.
I try it again, but I still can't get it to go down smooth. It's so disgusting, I choke.
Edibles are better.
Then why didn't you get me an edible?
Steven didn't have any. And drugs aren't really my thing.
I hold the joint between my fingers, looking down at it, wondering how I ended up here when I should be at my father's funeral. Drugs aren't my thing either, I guess. It feels so unnatural. What is your thing? I ask, looking back at Miller. He leans his head back against his seat and thinks on this for a moment.
Iced tea? And cornbread. I love cornbread.
I laugh. Not what I expected. I wait a moment before taking another hit. Lexi would be horrified if she saw me right now. Shit, Lexi. I didn't even tell her I was leaving the funeral. I look at my phone, but she hasn't texted. I only have one text from my mother, sent 15 minutes ago. Mom, where are you? I flip my phone face down. If I can't see the text, it doesn't exist.
What about you?
Miller asks.
What's your thing?
Acting. But you already know that. He makes a face.
When you asked what my thing was, for some reason, I thought we were talking about things we like to consume.
That makes me smile. No, it includes anything. What are you the most into? What is the one thing you would never be willing to give up in life? He's probably going to say Shelby.
Photography,
he says quickly.
Filming, editing, anything that puts me behind the camera.
He tilts his head and smiles at me.
But you already know that.
That why you have a dash cam? I say, pointing at it.
You have a need to be behind a camera, even when you're driving?
He nods.
I also have this.
He opens the glove box and pulls out a GoPro.
I always have some kind of camera on me. Never know when that perfect photographic moment will arise.
I think Miller might be just as into filming as I am when it comes to acting.
Too bad your ex won't let us work on the film project together. We might actually make a good team.
I lift the joint back to my mouth, even though I hate everything about it.
How much do I have to smoke before it makes me feel numb?
It might not make you feel numb. It might make you feel nervous and paranoid.
I look at the joint, disappointed.
Well, crap. I look for somewhere to snuff it out, but there's not an ashtray in his truck.
What do I do with it? I don't like it.
Miller takes it from me and pinches the end of it with his fingers. He gets out and throws it in a trash can, then comes back to his truck. Such a gentleman, buying me weed and then disposing of it for me.
What a weird day.
And I don't feel anything at all, still just full of grief.
I'm back together with Shelby.
I take it back. I felt that.
That sucks, I say.
Not really.
I roll my head and look at him pointedly.
No.
It does. It sucks. You shouldn't have even brought it up.
I didn't,
he says.
You did. You called her my ex a minute ago, and I felt I needed to clarify that we got back together.
I don't even know why he's telling me this. I tilt my head, narrowing my eyes. Do you think I'm into you? Is that why you keep informing me of your relationship status when we're together?
Miller smiles.
You're abrasive.
I laugh, turning away from him because I'm scared my laugh will result in tears. It's funny, though. Sad and funny. Because my mother used to refer to my father as abrasive. I guess the apple didn't fall far from my father's tree either. Miller must think he insulted me because he leans forward a little, trying to get my attention.
I didn't mean that in a negative way.
I wave him off, letting him know I'm not offended.
It's fine. You're right. I am abrasive. I like to argue, even when I know I'm wrong.
I face him. I'm getting better, though.
I'm learning that sometimes you have to walk away from the fight in order to win it.
My Aunt Jenny told me that once. I try to remember it every time I feel like I'm on the defensive. Miller smiles gently at me, and I don't know if the weed is finally kicking in or if his smile is making me lightheaded. Either way, it beats the headache I've had for 5 days from all the crying.
If you're back together with Shelby, why are you checking on me right now?
Pretty sure she wouldn't approve of this. A flash of guilt crosses his face. He grips his steering wheel, then slides his hands down it.
I'd feel even guiltier if I didn't check on you.
I'd really like to ruminate on that comment, but our conversation is ruined by the intrusion of a car that pulls up next to us. I glance out my open window, then sit up straight.
Crap.
Get in the car, Clara.
My mother's words are firm and loud, but it could be because the windows are down and she pulled up so close to Miller's truck that I'm not sure I'll be able to open the door.
Is that your mother? Miller whispers.
Yep. But oddly, it doesn't faze me as much as it probably should. Maybe the weed really did help because I kind of want to laugh that she's here.
I forgot we have that app.
She can track me anywhere.
Clara, my mother says again. Miller raises an eyebrow.
Good luck.
I shoot him a tight-lipped smile and then open my door.
I was right. I can't get out. You parked too close, Mom. My mother inhales a slow breath and then puts the gear shift in reverse. When I'm clear to open my door, I don't even look back at Miller. I walk to my mother's car and get inside. She says nothing as she begins to drive away from the theater. Nothing, until the words, "Who was that?" "Miller Adams." I can feel her disapproval, despite her silence. A few seconds later, she swings her head in my direction. "Oh my God, are you high?" "Huh? Were you just getting high with that guy?" "No, we were just talking." I don't sound convincing. She makes a "hmm" sound and then says, "You smell like weed." "Do I?" I sniff my dress, which is stupid because anyone who knows they don't smell like weed wouldn't sniff themselves to see if they do smell like weed. Her jaw clenches even tighter when we make eye contact. Something has completely given me away. I flip down the visor and look at my bloodshot eyes. Wow. That happened fast. I flip up the visor. I can't believe you skipped your father's funeral to get high. I stayed for most of it. It was your father's funeral, Clara! She is so pissed right now. I sigh and stare out my window. How long am I grounded for? She releases a frustrated breath. I'll let you know after I talk to your father. Her mouth clamps shut when she realizes what she was about to say. I'm not certain, because I'm staring out my window. But I think she cries the entire way home.
Chapter 7. Morgan. 2 years, 6 months, and 13 days. That's exactly how long Clara and I can live off Chris's life insurance policy, if we continue to live like we're living. His Social Security check won't come close to what his actual paycheck was, which means decisions need to be made. Finances need to be reconfigured. Clara's college fund may need to be decreased. I need to find a job. A career. Yet, I can't seem to get out of bed or off the couch to face any of it. I feel like with the more hours I can put between the accident and the current moment, the pain will get better. When the pain is better, maybe my lack of desire to tackle everything that needs to be done will lessen. I figure the quickest way to get from point A, grief, to point B, less grief, is to sleep my way through it. I think Clara feels the same way because both of us spent most of the weekend sleeping. She's barely spoken to me since the funeral. I took her phone as soon as I found out she'd gotten high. But I haven't been in the mood for conversation lately either, so I don't push her. I don't push her, but I do hug her. I don't know if the hugs are more because I need them or because I'm worried about how she's taking everything. Tuesday will make a week since the wreck, and I have no idea if she's going back to school tomorrow or if she still needs more time. I'd give her more time if she needs it, but we haven't discussed it yet. I peek into her room just to make sure she's okay. I don't know how to confront this kind of grief with her. We've never had to navigate something this awful. I feel lost without Chris, without Jenny, even. They were always my go-tos when I needed to vent or needed reassurance about how I'm parenting Clara. My mother died a few years ago, but she's the last person I'd want to get parenting advice from anyway. I have friends, but none of them have experienced this level of unexpected loss. I feel like I'm navigating waters that are uncharted by anyone I know. I plan on putting Clara in therapy, but maybe not for another month or so. I want to give her time to work out the most painful part of the grief before I force her into something I know she isn't going to want to do. The house has never been so quiet. Not even the sound of the TV fills the background, because the damn cable is still broken. Chris took care of all the bills, so I'm not even sure what the name of our cable company is. I'll figure it out eventually. I lower myself to the living room floor. It's dark, and I attempt to meditate. But really, all I'm doing is thinking of everything I can possibly think of that doesn't involve a thought of Chris or Jenny. But it's hard. Almost every memory I have includes one of them. They were both a part of every single milestone or event in my life. My entire pregnancy with Clara, her birth, our wedding, our anniversaries, graduations, family holidays, birthday cookouts, movie dates, fishing and camping trips, Elijah's birth. Every important moment of my life included the two of them. They were my whole world, and I was theirs. Which is why I refuse to give another thought as to why they might have been together. There is no way they would have betrayed me like that. Betrayed Clara like that. I would have known. I absolutely would have known. My thoughts are interrupted when the doorbell rings. I get a glimpse of Jonah's car out the window as I'm heading toward the front door. I don't feel relieved to see him, because I'd rather not have any visitors at all. But I also don't feel the irritation I usually feel at the sight of him when I open the door. My sympathy for his situation overshadows my irritation. Of course, I'm devastated about Jenny and Chris, but I'm reasonable enough to know that this affects Jonah more than it affects me. He's got an infant to raise. I at least had Chris, Jenny, and Chris's parents to help me with Clara. Jonah only has his mother. I guess he has me, too, but I'm not much help right now. I open the door, shocked by what I see. Jonah hasn't shaved in a few days. He doesn't even look like he's showered or slept. He probably hasn't, because I haven't, and I don't even have an infant to care for.
Hey, he says, his voice flat.
I open the door to let him in. Where's Elijah?
My mother wanted him for a few hours.
That makes me feel good. Jonah needs the break. I don't know why he's here, but I'm scared it's because he wants to talk about what happened. He's probably here to dissect why they were together. If I could have my way, I'd never speak of it. I want to pretend it didn't happen. The grief of losing them is enough. I don't want to pile anger and feelings of betrayal on top of that. I just want to miss them. I don't think I have enough strength left to hate them. We're standing quietly in the living room for only 5 seconds, but it feels like longer. I don't know what to do. Take him to the back patio to sit? Take a seat at the dining room table with him? The couch? This is awkward because I don't have that kind of ease with Jonah anymore. My routine with him since he showed back up has been avoidance. And since I can't really avoid him right now, I feel like this is all new territory.
Is Clara home?
I nod. Yeah, in her room. He glances down the hallway.
I'd like to talk to you in private if you have a minute.
The living room is the farthest room from Clara's bedroom. I have a straight view down the hallway, and we'll see her if she comes out of her room, so I point him toward the love seat, and I take the couch, facing the hallway. He leans forward, elbows on his knees, fingers coming to a point against his chin. He sighs heavily.
I don't know if it's too soon to discuss it, he says, but I have so many questions.
I don't ever want to discuss it. He sighs, leaning back against the couch.
Morgan.
I hate how he says my name, full of disappointment. What good would it do, Jonah? We don't know why they were together. If we start dissecting it, we might find answers we don't want. He squeezes his jaw. We sit in a stark, uncomfortable silence for an entire minute. Then, as if it's a brand new thought, Jonah's eyes flicker to mine.
Where is Chris's car?
Jonah can tell by the way I avert my eyes that this is something else I was trying to avoid.
He left here in his car that morning, didn't he?
Yes, I whisper. I've been wondering where his car is, but I haven't done anything about trying to locate it. I'm afraid of what the location might prove. I'd rather just not know where it is forever, rather than find out it's parked at some hotel.
Did he have OnStar?
I nod. Jonah pulls out his cell phone and goes outside to make the phone call. I rush to the kitchen because I need a drink. I feel nauseated. I find the bottle of wine Jonah and Jenny brought over last week for my birthday. We never got around to opening it because we had a bottle left over. I unscrew the cork and pour myself a glass. The glass is almost empty when Jonah walks into the kitchen. His face is completely drained of color. and I know with that one look that this isn't good. My biggest fear is probably about to come true, and even though I don't want to know, I still can't help but ask. I cover my mouth with a hesitant hand.
"Where is it?"
I whisper. His face conveys his words before they even come out of his mouth.
"It's parked at the Langford."
My hand drops from my mouth and I clench my stomach. I must look like I'm about to faint because Jonah takes the glass of wine from my hand and sets it carefully on the counter.
"I called the hotel," he continues. "They've been leaving voicemails on Chris's phone. They said we can come get the keys and the stuff that was left in their room."
Their room. My sister and my husband's hotel room.
"I can't, Jonah."
My voice is a pained whisper. His expression is sympathetic now. He puts his hands on my shoulders and dips his head.
"You have to. His car will be towed tomorrow if we don't pick it up tonight. You need his car, Morgan."
My eyes are filled with tears. I press my lips together and nod.
"Okay, but I don't want to know what's in the room." "That's fine. You can drive Chris's car home, and I'll take care of the rest."
Chris and I stayed at the Langford once. It was our 2-year anniversary, and it was before I had finally dropped out of college. He couldn't take the time off his weekend job, so he booked us a Wednesday night. My mother kept Clara, and we spent the entire night in bed together. Sleeping. It was heaven. We were both exhausted from having a toddler and trying to finish school, so as soon as we got a moment of peace, we took advantage of it. We were only 19 and 20 years old, not even old enough to drink alcohol, but already tired enough to have been twice our age. It eventually got to a point where daycare was costing more than I was making at my part-time job. We were barely making ends meet, and the only logical solution at that time was for me to stay home with Clara. Chris said I could finish my degree after he finished his, but I never re-enrolled. Once Chris found a job, the financial struggles subsided and we fell into a comfortable routine. I was content with my life. We both were, I thought. But maybe Chris was less content with his life than I assumed. I'm sitting in Jonah's car. We're parked next to Chris's SUV. Jonah got a key from the front desk and went inside the hotel room to find Chris's car key. He's been in there for 5 minutes. I lean my head back and close my eyes, saying a silent prayer, hoping he'll come tell me that whatever he found proved we're way off base. But I already know. In my heart, I know that I've been betrayed in the worst way possible by the one person I never thought would hurt me. My sister. My best friend. Chris doing something like this was a knife to my heart. But Jenny? That's an obliteration of my soul. When Jonah is back in the driver's seat, he tosses Jenny's duffel bag into the back, the one Chris and I bought her for Christmas last year. He hands me the keys to Chris's car. I'm staring at the bag, wondering why she would have needed it. She left her house that morning for a 12-hour shift, not for an overnight trip. Why would she need an overnight bag? Why was her bag in there? Jonah doesn't respond. His jaw is like concrete as he stares forward. Why did she need a bag, Jonah? She told you she was going to work, right? She wasn't staying the night anywhere.
Her scrubs were in there, he says.
But the way he says it makes me think he's lying. She had an overnight bag so she could change out of her scrubs after leaving my house. But what was she changing into? I reach to the back seat and he grabs my wrist and stops me. I pull away from him and turn around in my seat, attempting to reach for the duffel bag again. He blocks me with his arm, so we spend the next several seconds scuffling in the car until he has both arms around me, trying to pull me back into my seat. But I've already unzipped it. As soon as I see the black lace trim edging a piece of dainty lingerie, I fall back into the front seat. I stare ahead, motionless. I try not to let the images flash through my mind, but knowing my sister was planning to wear lingerie for my husband is quite possibly one of the worst things imaginable. Jonah is also immobile. We each silently grapple with the reality of what this means. My doubt is devoured by our new grim reality. I curl into myself, pulling my knees to my chest.
Why?
My voice strains against the walls of my throat. Jonah reaches a comforting arm out, but I push him away. Take me home. He doesn't move for a moment.
But Chris's car.
I don't want that fucking car. Jonah eyes me for a beat, then nods once. He cranks his car and reverses out of our parking spot, leaving Chris's car where it sat untouched for the past week. I hope the car gets towed. It's in Chris's name, not mine. I don't want to see the car at my house. The bank can repossess it, as far as I'm concerned. As soon as Jonah pulls back up in my driveway, I swing open the passenger door. It feels like I've been holding my breath since we left the Langford, but stepping out of the car and into the fresh night air does nothing to refill my lungs. I don't expect Jonah to get out, but he does. He begins to follow me across my yard, but before I open my front door, I turn around to face him. Did you know about their affair? He shakes his head.
Of course not.
My chest is heaving. I'm angry, but not at Jonah, I don't think. I'm angry at everything. Chris, Jenny, every single memory I have of them together. I'm angry because I know this is now my new obsession. I'll be constantly wondering when it started, what every look meant, what every conversation between them meant. Did they have inside jokes? Did they say them in front of me? Did they laugh at my inability to sense what was happening between them? Jonah takes a hesitant step forward. I'm crying now. But these tears weren't born from the grief I've been grappling with this entire past week. These tears are born from a more innate anguish, if that's even possible. I attempt to inhale a breath, but my lungs feel clogged. Jonah's concern grows as he watches me, so he moves even closer, invading my personal space, making it even harder for me to catch a breath. I'm sorry, he says, attempting to soothe the panic within me. I push him away, but I don't go inside yet. I don't want Clara to see me like this. I'm audibly gasping now, and it's not helping that I'm trying to stop the tears. Jonah leads me to a chair on the front patio and forces me to sit. I can't. I'm winded. I can't breathe.
I'll go get you some water.
He heads inside the house, and as soon as the door closes, I burst into sobs. I cover my mouth with both hands, wanting it to stop. I don't want to be sad or angry. I just want to be numb. I see something out of the corner of my eye, so I look at the house next door. Mrs. Nettle is peeking out at me from behind her living room curtains, watching me as I cry. She's the nosiest neighbor we've ever had. It makes me angry that she's watching me right now, probably getting pleasure from seeing me in the middle of a panic attack. When she moved in 3 years ago, she didn't like the color of grass in our yard because it didn't match the grass in her yard. She tried to petition the Homeowners Association to force us to replant our yard with alfalfa rather than St. Augustine. And that was just the first month she lived here. She's gotten so much worse since then. God, my random anger at my 80-year-old neighbor is making it even harder to breathe. My heart rate is so fast right now, I can feel it pounding in my neck. I put a hand on my chest just as Jonah returns with the water. He takes a seat next to me, ensuring I take a sip. Then another. He places the glass on the table between us.
Lean forward and put your head between your knees, he says.
I do it without question. Jonah inhales a slow breath, intending for me to mimic it. I do. He repeats it about 10 times until my heart rate is slowed down significantly. When I feel less on the verge of a heart attack, I lift my head and lean back in the patio chair, attempting to refill my lungs with air. I let out a long sigh, then glance next door. Mrs. Nettle is still staring at us from behind her curtain. She doesn't even try to hide her nosiness. I flip her off, which works. She snatches the curtains shut and turns off her living room light. Jonah makes a small sound in his throat, like he wants to laugh. Maybe it is funny seeing me flip off an 80-year-old, but there's no way I could possibly find it in me to muster up even a modicum of laughter right now. How are you so calm? I ask him. Jonah leans back in his chair with a sidelong look in my direction.
I'm not calm, he says. I'm hurt. I'm angry. But I'm also not as invested as you, so I think it's natural for us to have different reactions.
Not as invested as me?
Chris wasn't my brother, he says,
matter-of-factly.
Jenny wasn't someone I've been married to for half my life. They've cut you deeper than they've cut me.
I look away from Jonah because his words make me want to wince. I don't like that description. They've cut you. It's the perfect explanation for how I feel. But I never imagined Jenny and Chris would be the ones to make me feel it. Jonah and I don't speak for a while after that. I'm no longer crying, so I should probably go inside now that I'm in the clear. I've been trying to hide my emotions from Clara, not the grief. The grief is natural. I don't mind being sad in front of her, but I don't want her to sense my anger. What Jenny and Chris did is something I never want Clara to find out. She's gone through enough. No telling how she'd lash out if she uncovered the truth about them. She's already lashed out enough with behavior that is so unlike her. Clara left Chris's funeral early. I found her at the movie theater getting high with that guy, Miller Adams, the one you claimed was a good kid. I don't know why I threw in that last part, like it's somehow Jonah's fault. Jonah releases a sigh. Wow. I know. And the worst part is, I don't even know how to deal with it, or how long I should ground her for. Jonah pushes himself out of the chair, coming to a stand.
She's suffering. We all are. I doubt it's something she'd have done if it were under different circumstances. Maybe give her a pass on her behavior this week.
I nod, but I disagree with him. A free pass would be appropriate for something milder than doing drugs. It's more appropriate for something like breaking curfew. I can't just let it slide that she left Chris's funeral to get high. Not to mention she was with the one guy her father told her not to spend time with. If I let either of those things slide, what will that leniency lead to? I stand up, ready to go inside. I open the front door and turn to face Jonah. He's in the doorway now, staring at his feet when he says,
"I need to pick up Elijah."
He lifts his eyes, and I can't tell if he's holding back tears or if I just forgot that when you're this close to Jonah Sullivan, the blue in his eyes looks liquefied.
"Will you be okay?"
I let out a half-hearted laugh. I still have tears on my cheeks that haven't even dried, and he's asking me if I'll be okay? I haven't been okay for a week. I'm not okay now. But I shrug and say, I'll survive. He hesitates like he wants to say more, but he doesn't. He walks back to his car and I close my front door. What was that about? I spin around to find Clara standing at the entrance to the hallway. Nothing, I say, almost too quickly. Is he okay? Yeah, he's struggling. Raising Elijah on his own, he had questions. I'm not the good liar in this family, but that technically wasn't a lie. I'm sure Jonah is struggling. It's his first child. He just lost Jenny. I remember when Clara was a baby and Chris was a full-time student and worked all the days he didn't have class. I know how hard it is to do everything on your own. I've been there. Granted, Elijah is an easier baby than Clara. They look like they could be twins, but their personalities are nothing alike. Who has Elijah? Clara asks. I hear that question come from Clara, but I can't answer it because my thoughts aren't moving forward. They're stuck on the last thing that went through my head. They look like they could be twins. I grip the wall after being hit by what feels like a 10,000-pound realization. Why did you leave the house with Jonah? Clara asks. Where'd y'all go? Elijah doesn't look anything like Jonah. He looks just like Clara. Mom? Clara says, with more emphasis, trying to get a response from me. And Clara looks just like Chris. The walls in front of me begin to pulsate. I wave Clara off because I know what a terrible liar I am, and I feel like she can see right through me. You're still grounded. Go back to your room. I'm grounded from the living room? She asks, puzzled. Clara, go, I say firmly, needing her to leave the room before I completely break down right in front of her. Clara storms off. I rush to my own bedroom and slam the door. As if their deaths weren't enough, the blows just keep coming, and they're getting more and more severe.
Chapter 8. Clara. I left the house as soon as my mother went to her bedroom and slammed her door.
I'm not supposed to leave, so I'm sure this will extend however long I'm grounded for, but at this point, I don't care. I can't be cooped up inside that house for another minute. Everything reminds me of my father. And every time I look at my mother, she's sitting quietly in random spots, staring at nothing. Or snapping at me. I know she's hurting, but she's not the only one. All I did was ask her where Elijah was and why she left the house with Jonah, but she completely overreacted. Will this be how it is from now on? My father is gone, so now she feels she has to compensate for his absence and be even stricter on me. Who gets grounded from their own living room? I'm grounded from my phone, so my mother won't be able to see where I am. I was afraid she'd call the police, so before I left, I wrote her a note that said, "I'm really hurting. I'm going to Lexi's for a couple of hours, but I'll be home by 10. I knew if I threw in the hurting part, that maybe she wouldn't be so angry. Grief is a beast, but it's also a great excuse. I drove to Lexi's house after leaving my own, hoping she'd be home, but she wasn't. Now I'm sitting in the parking lot of the movie theater, staring at Miller's truck. I pulled in because I was thinking how nice it would be to sit in the dark theater for an hour and a half and forget the outside world even exists. But now that I know Miller is working tonight, I'm not sure I want to go in. It'll seem like I came here on purpose, seeking him out. Maybe I did. I don't even know. Either way, I'm not going to stop going to the movies anytime he's working simply because he's got a girlfriend. I'm also not going to stop going just because I'm worried it'll be awkward. I mean, the guy bought me drugs. Can't get much more awkward than that. The outdoor ticket counter window is closed, but Miller is inside. I watch him through the glass doors for a moment. He's wiping down the concession stand counters while Steven, the guy who sold him the weed, sweeps up random spills of popcorn. The lobby of the theater is quiet when I walk inside, so both of them look up when they hear the door open. Miller shoots me a small smile and stops cleaning when he sees me. I'm suddenly more nervous than I anticipated I'd be. He presses his palms onto the counter and leans forward as I approach him.
I figured you'd be grounded.
I shrug. I am. She took my phone and banished me to my bedroom. I look at the menu over his head. I escaped. He laughs.
Final showing started between 30 and 45 minutes ago, but you can take your pick. Theater 4 is the emptiest.
What's playing in 4?
Interstate. It's an action flick.
Gross, I'll take it. I pull money out of my purse, but he waves it away.
Oh, don't worry about it. Family gets in free. If anyone asks, tell them you're my sister.
I'd almost rather pay than pretend we're siblings. Miller laughs and grabs a large cup.
What do you want to drink?
Sprite. He hands me the Sprite, then wets a handful of napkins in the sink behind him. I look at him with confusion as he hands me the wet napkins.
You have stuff,
he says, dragging a finger down his cheek.
Makeup from crying.
Oh. I wipe at my cheeks. I don't even remember putting on mascara today. I seem to be going through the motions of life without actually being aware of any of the motions. I wasn't even aware that I was crying the entire way here. Hell, I'm probably still crying. I can't even tell anymore. My guilt over knowing I was texting Aunt Jenny the moment she had the wreck, coupled with the gaping loss I feel for both of them, doesn't feel like it'll ever go away. The tears that seemed to only come at night are starting to follow me into the daytime. I thought time would make it better, but so far time has just allowed my feelings to build and build. My heart feels swollen, like it might explode if even one more small tragedy finds its way in.
Miller makes me a large bag of popcorn as I wipe away my mascara.
You want butter?
Lots of it. I toss the napkin in a nearby trash can, not even concerned if I got it all. He douses the popcorn in butter.
Don't forget, if an employee asks for a ticket, you're my sister,
he says, as he hands the popcorn to me. I put a few pieces of popcorn in my mouth as I back away. Thanks, Bubba. He makes a pained face after I call him that, almost as if it's a gross thought. I like that the thought of us being relatives repulses him. That means there's a chance he's imagined us together in an entirely different capacity. The popcorn is stale. I'm sure it's because the concession stand was shutting down when he made me a bag. Can't expect fresh popcorn at the end of the night. But it's so bad that I'm pretty sure this popcorn is the reject pile that's been resting untouched at the bottom of the popcorn machine since it was first popped this morning. I'm eating it anyway. I chose to sit in the back row in the corner because there are only two other people in here and they're in the middle. I didn't want to sit in front of them because I planned on crying through the whole thing. But it's actually an interesting enough movie to keep my mind off things. I didn't say it was a good movie. Just interesting. At least, the main character is interesting. She's a no-holds-barred badass, with shoulder-length hair that whips and sways with her every movement. I've focused more on her hair than on the storyline. My hair is long, down to the middle of my back. My dad loved my hair long and talked me out of cutting it off every time I got the urge. I pull at a strand of my hair and slide my fingers down the length of it. I'm tired of it. I think I'll cut it off soon. I'm due for a change. Hey, Miller whispers. I look up just as he's taking a seat next to me.
How's the movie?
I don't know. I'm thinking about cutting off my hair. He reaches into my popcorn and grabs a handful, then leans back in his seat and props his feet up on the chair in front of him.
I have scissors behind the concession stand.
I didn't mean right now.
Oh, well, whenever you're ready. The scissors stay here, so just show up and I'll cut it.
I laugh. I didn't mean I wanted you to cut it.
Okay, but fair warning, Stephen is better at sweeping up popcorn and selling weed than he is at cutting hair.
I roll my eyes, resting my feet on the back of the seat in front of me.
New flip-flops?
He asks, staring at my feet. Yep. Did some real shady shit for these. Miller grabs another handful of popcorn, and we don't speak for the next few minutes. The movie comes to an end, and the only other people in the theater get up to leave when the credits begin rolling. He digs his hand into the popcorn again. We're not doing anything wrong. But it feels like we are. Before he sat down next to me, I felt numb, but now my body is charged with adrenaline. Our arms aren't even touching. I'm hogging both armrests, and he's leaned away from me, probably to avoid any form of contact. But still, it feels wrong. He's sitting next to the one girl we both know he shouldn't be sitting next to. And even though it makes me feel guilty, it also makes me feel good. The credits are still rolling when Miller says,
"This popcorn is really stale.
It's the worst popcorn I've ever had."
"It's almost gone,"
he says, indicating the bag.
"Doesn't seem like you minded."
I shrug. "I'm not picky." More silence passes between us. He smiles at me, and a surge of heat rushes through me. I look into the bag of popcorn and shake it around like I'm trying to find a good piece, because I don't want to look at him and feel this for someone who has a girlfriend. I don't want to feel this for anyone.
Feeling anything remotely good makes me feel like a shit human considering the circumstances of the past week. But he's still staring at me, and hasn't made a move to leave yet. And since he's blocking me from the aisle, I feel forced to make conversation. How long have you worked here?
A year.
He settles into his seat a little more.
I like it okay. I think the idea of working at a theater is more exciting than the reality of it. It's mostly just a lot of cleaning.
But you get to watch all the movies you want, right?
That's why I still work here. I've seen every movie released since I started. I look at it as preparation for my career, research.
What's your favorite movie?
Of all time?
He asks. Pick one from the past 10 years.
I can't,
he says.
There are so many great ones, and I love them all for different reasons. I love the technical aspect of Birdman. I love the performances in Call Me By Your Name. Fantastic Mr. Fox is my favorite cartoon because Wes Anderson is a goddamn genius.
He glances at me.
What about you?
I don't think Fantastic Mr. Fox counts. It seems older than 10 years. I lean my head back and stare up at the ceiling. It's a tough question. I'm like you. I don't know that I have a favorite movie. I tend to judge more on the talent than the storyline. I think Emma Stone is probably my favorite actress. And Adam Driver is the best actor of our time, but I don't think he's landed the role of his lifetime yet. He was great in Black Klansman, but I'm not crazy about some of the other movies he's been in.
But did you see the Kylo Ren skit?
Yes, I say, sitting up. On SNL? Oh my God, it was so funny. I'm smiling. But I hate that I'm smiling. It feels weird to smile when I'm so full of sadness. But this is how Miller makes me feel every time I'm around him. He's the only thing that seems to be able to take my mind off everything, yet he's the one person I can't really hang out with. Thanks for that, Shelby. It sucks. I don't like thinking about it, even though we're together right now. But when I eventually return to school, things will go back to how they've been. Miller will keep his distance. He'll respect his relationship with Shelby, which will only serve to make me respect him even more. And I'll just continue to be in a depressing funk. I should go, I say. Miller hesitates before moving.
Yeah, I think my break was over 10 minutes ago.
We both stand up, but I can't get out of the aisle because he's blocking my way, facing me, not making an effort to walk away. He's just staring down at me as if he wants to say something else. Or do something else.
I'm really sorry about what happened, he says.
At first, I'm not sure what he's talking about, but then it hits me. I press my lips together and nod, but I don't say anything because it's the last thing I want to talk or think about.
I should have said that the other day, at the funeral.
It's fine, I say. I'm fine, or at least I'll be fine eventually. I sigh. Hopefully. He's staring at me like he wants to pull me in for a hug, and I really wish he would. But instead, he turns and walks out of the aisle toward the exit. I stop at the restroom on our way out. He grabs a trash can and starts to pull it toward the theater we just came out of.
See you, Clara.
I don't tell him goodbye. I walk into the restroom and don't even bother pretending things will be the same between us the next time I see him. He'll avoid me while being all faithful and shit, and whatever, that's okay. I need to stop interacting with him anyway, because as good as it feels when I'm around him, it's starting to hurt when I'm not. And I don't need another painful thing added to my already existing pile of excruciating feelings. When I get home, I expect my mother to be waiting up for me, pissed and ready to argue.
Instead, the house is quiet. Her bedroom light is off. When I get to my own bedroom, I'm surprised to find my cell phone on my pillow. A peace offering. That's unexpected. I lie back on my bed and catch up on my messages. Lexi wants to know if I'll be at school tomorrow. I wasn't planning on going back so soon, but the thought of being in this house sounds way worse than school, so I tell her I'll be there. I open Instagram and browse through Miller's profile. I know I said I needed to stop interacting with him, and I will. But first I need to send him a message. Just one. Then we can go back to how things have been between us for the past year. Non-existent. Just wanted to say thank you for the free movie and the shitty popcorn. You're the best sibling I've ever had. He doesn't follow me, so I expect it to go to his filtered messages and take him a month to read. But he actually responds within a few minutes. Miller.
You got your phone back.
I grin and roll onto my stomach when his message comes in. Me. Yeah. It was on my pillow when I got home. I think it's a peace offering. Miller.
She sounds like a cool mom.
I roll my eyes. Cool is being very generous. Me. She's great. I even put one of those smiling face emojis to make my response more believable. Miller.
You coming back to school tomorrow?
Me. I think so. Miller.
Good deal. I should probably stop talking to you here. I think Shelby knows my password.
Me. Wow, that's like next level. You proposing soon? Miller.
You love to make fun of my relationship.
Me. It's my favorite pastime. Miller.
I guess I make it easy.
Me. Has she always been a jealous person, or did you do something to make her that way? Miller.
She's not a jealous person. She's only jealous when it comes to you.
Me. What? Why? Miller.
It's a long story. A boring one. Got it, Clara?
It's a boring story? Whatever. The fact that Miller has a story that includes me in the narrative is going to be the only thing I can think about for the rest of the night. Me. Good night. Make sure you delete these messages. Miller.
Already have.
I stare at my phone, knowing I should stop, but I send him one more message. Me. Here's my number in case you get your heart broken again. I send him my phone number, but he doesn't respond. Probably for the best. I go back to his page and scroll through his pictures. I've looked through his page before, but not since I've actually had a conversation with him. Miller is good with a camera. There are a few pictures of Miller with Shelby, but most of his pictures are of random things. None of him by himself, which I like for some reason. The picture that catches my eye is a black and white photo he took of the city limit sign. It makes me laugh, so I double tap the picture to like it. I'm still scrolling through my feed when a text comes through from a number I don't recognize.
Troublemaker.
His text makes me laugh. I honestly didn't like his picture with any ill intent. I genuinely thought it was funny. And for a minute, I forgot that me even liking it could send him back to the interrogation room with Shelby. I immediately save his number in my contacts. It makes me wonder if he's going to save my number under my real name or a fake name. Shelby would flip if she knew he had my number in his phone. And I'm sure if she has his Instagram password, she probably goes through his phone. Me. You saving my number under a fake name so you don't get in trouble? Miller.
I was thinking about it. What about Jason?
Me. Jason is a good name. Everyone knows a Jason. She wouldn't be suspicious. I smile, but my smile only lasts a fleeting second. I remember the last thing Aunt Jenny texted me. You don't want to be the other girl. Trust me. She's right. Aunt Jenny was always right. What am I doing? Me. Never mind, don't save me under a fake name. I don't want to be Jason in your phone, and I don't want to be your fake sibling at the movie theater. Call me someday when I can just be Clara. The dots appear on my phone. They disappear. He doesn't text me back. After a few minutes, I screenshot our messages and then delete his number.
Chapter 9. Morgan. I've just slipped into a light sleep when I hear a banging on the door that startles me. I sit up in bed and reach over to shake Chris awake. His side of the bed is empty. I stare at it, wondering when things like that are going to stop. It's been less than 2 weeks since they died, but I've picked up my phone at least 5 times to call him or Jenny. It's so natural that I just forget. Then I'm forced to relive the grief. Another pounding on the door. My head swings in the direction of the noise. My heart rate picks up because I'm going to have to deal with this whether I'm prepared to or not. In the past, when something happened unexpectedly in the middle of the night, Chris would always take care of it. I pull on a robe and rush to the door before whoever it is wakes up Clara. The pounding is so incessant, it's starting to make me angry. It better not be Mrs. Nettle from next door, here to blame me for something. She once woke us up at 2 a.m. to complain about a squirrel in our backyard tree. I flip on the porch light and look through the peephole, relieved to see it isn't Mrs. Nettle. It's just Jonah, disheveled and holding Elijah tightly against his chest. But my relief only lasts for a second when I realize that it's midnight, and Jonah doesn't just randomly stop by at midnight. Something must be wrong with Elijah. I swing open the door. Is everything okay? Jonah shakes his head, his eyes frantic as he pushes past me.
No.
I close the door and walk over to them. Does he have a fever?
No, he's fine.
I'm confused. You just said he's not okay.
He's fine. I'm not fine.
He hands Elijah to me, and I check his forehead for a temperature anyway. He doesn't have a fever, so I start to check him for a rash. I can't think of any other reason he'd be here this late at night.
He's fine, Jonah repeats. He's perfect, he's happy, he's fed, and I...
He shakes his head and walks back toward the front door without Elijah.
I'm done. I can't do this.
A sinking feeling consumes me. I rush after Jonah and intercept him, pressing my back against my front door. What do you mean you can't do this? Jonah takes a step back and then faces the other direction. He clasps his hands behind his head. I realize what I initially thought was fear is nothing less than devastation. Jonah doesn't have to tell me why he's so upset. I already know. He spins around, facing me again, his eyes full of heartache and lined with tears. He waves a hand toward Elijah.
He smiled for the first time tonight.
He pauses, as if what he's about to say next is too painful to put into words.
Elijah? My son? Has Chris's fucking smile.
No, no, no. I shake my head, feeling the heartache pouring out of him. Jonah, I hear Clara's bedroom door open before I can process what this all means. My sympathetic expression immediately changes to a pleading one. Please don't do this right now, I beg him in a whisper. I don't want her to find out what they did. It'll break her. Jonah's eyes move past me. I'm assuming to Clara. What's going on? She asks. I spin around, and Clara is standing at the entrance of the hallway, rubbing sleep from her eyes. Jonah mutters,
I can't do this. I'm sorry.
Under his breath and opens the door. He leaves. I walk over to Clara and shove Elijah into her arms. I'll be right back. Jonah is almost to his car when I shut the front door and rush after him. He hears me following him, so he spins around.
Why would Jenny lie to me about something this huge?
He's full of anguish, gripping his hair and then slapping his palms against the car, like he has no idea what to do with his hands.
His head hangs between his shoulders in defeat. Having an affair is one thing, but to lead me to believe I fathered her child? Who does that, Morgan?
He pushes off the car and strides toward me. I've never seen him this angry, so I find myself taking small steps backward.
Did you know he wasn't mine?
He's looking at me like I was in on this somehow.
Is that why she showed up out of the blue at my father's funeral last year? She needed to cover up who really got her pregnant? Was this some kind of sick plan?
His words kind of hurt, because of course I didn't know any of that. I only just recently suspected Chris could be Elijah's father, but this is the first time I've seen Jonah since having that suspicion. Do you actually think I would have let them get away with that? He grips the sides of his head in frustration, then throws his arms out.
I don't know. You've been with Chris half your life. How could you not suspect that he was Elijah's father?
He walks back toward his car, but then thinks of something else to say that will likely make me even angrier with him.
You knew they were sleeping together, Morgan. Deep down, you had to know. But we both know how good you are at ignoring what's right in front of you.
Yep. I'm definitely a lot angrier than I was 10 seconds ago. Jonah steps back, as if his own words boomeranged back into his gut. His anger is immediately swallowed by the apologetic look in his eyes. Are you done? I ask. He nods, but barely. Where's Elijah's diaper bag? Jonah walks to the car and opens the back door. He hands me the diaper bag. He stares down at the concrete beneath his feet, waiting for me to walk away. You're all he has, Jonah. He lifts his head and stares at me a moment, and then slowly shakes his head.
Actually, you're all he has. He's your sister's child. He has absolutely nothing of me in him.
His words don't come out with the vengeance that was coursing through him earlier. Now he's just quiet and broken. I look at him pleadingly. I can't imagine what this must be like for him, so I'm doing my best not to judge his reaction. But he loves Elijah. There's no way he can walk away from an infant he's raised for 2 months, no matter how hurt he is right now. He'll end up regretting this. I soften my own voice when I speak. You are the only parent he knows. Go home, sleep it off. Come back and get him in the morning. I walk back to my house. I don't mean to slam the door, but I do, and it startles Elijah. He begins to cry. Clara is seated on the couch with him, so I take him out of her arms so she can get back to bed. What's wrong with Jonah? She asks. He seemed angry. I play it down as much as I can, even though I know I'm a terrible liar. He's just exhausted. I offered to keep Elijah for the night to give him a break. Clara stares at me for a moment. She knows I'm lying, but she doesn't press me. She does roll her eyes when she passes me, though. When she's back in her room, I take Elijah to my bedroom and sit down on the bed, holding him. He's wide awake now, but he's no longer crying. He's smiling. And Jonah is right. When he smiles, there's a deep dimple that forms in the center of his chin. He looks exactly like Chris.
Chapter 10. Clara. Everyone thought Jonah would be back teaching his classes on Monday, but he wasn't. Mom said Jonah would pick up Elijah on Monday, but it's Wednesday now, and he didn't. I don't know what's going on because my mother won't tell me anything. So when Lexi comes to my locker after last period and says, "What's going on with Uncle Teacher?" I have no idea what to say. I close my locker and shrug. I don't know. I think he's having a breakdown. He dropped Elijah off with us Sunday night, and all I heard him say before he stormed out of the house was, "I can't do this. I'm sorry." Shit. So your mom still has Elijah? The way Lexi is chewing her gum makes it seem like we're chatting about going to the mall, rather than Jonah possibly abandoning his infant son. Yep. Lexi leans against the locker next to me. That's not good. It's fine. He'll probably pick him up today. I think he just needed to catch up on sleep. Lexi can tell I'm making excuses. She shrugs and pops a bubble with her gum.
Yeah, maybe. But fair warning, my dad has been catching up on sleep for 13 years. I humor her with a laugh, but Jonah is nothing like Lexi's dad. Not that I've ever met her biological father, but Jonah would never do something like that to Elijah. My mother said it was the day after Christmas when he stormed out of the house and yelled, "I'm done." He never came back. She pops another bubble. If there's one thing my dad is good at, it's being done. He's been being done for 13 years. She suddenly clamps her mouth shut and looks over my shoulder. She's focused on something else now. Or someone else. I turn around and see Miller heading this direction. His eyes land on mine, and for a substantial 3 seconds, he holds my stare. His entire focus is on me so hard, he has to crane his neck a little as he passes us, before he looks away almost forcefully. We haven't spoken since that night over text. I like that he's not pursuing me, but I also hate it. I want him to be a good human, but I'd also very much like it if he didn't care so much about his current relationship. Lexi whistles out a breath.
I felt that.
I roll my eyes. No, you didn't.
I did. That look he gave you? It was like...
Back to Jonah, I say, pushing off my locker. He's a good dad. He just needed a break. $50 says he doesn't come back. Lexi follows me toward the exit to the parking lot.
Back to where? I ask.
To school or to Elijah?
Both.
Didn't he only move here because Jenny was pregnant? He probably had a life outside of this town that he'd love to get back to. Start over, pretend the past year never happened.
Ugh, you're terrible.
No, men are terrible. Dads are the most terrible, she says. My shoulders shrink a little at her comment. I sigh, thinking about my father.
Mine wasn't.
He was the greatest. Lexi pauses her steps. Clara, I'm so sorry. I'm a dumbass. I step back and grab her hand, pulling her forward with me.
It's fine.
But you're wrong about Jonah. He's like my dad. He's one of the good ones. He loves Elijah too much to just up and abandon him like this. We make it another 5 feet before Lexi stops again, pulling me to a stop with her. I turn around, my back to the parking lot, my eyes on her.
What's wrong?
Don't look right now, but Miller just pulled up next to your car. My eyes widen.
He did?
Yes. And I need you to take me home, but I don't want to make it awkward if he's wanting to talk to you, so I'm going to go back inside the school. Text me when it's safe to come out.
Okay.
I'm nodding, my stomach full of nerves.
Also, you're full of it. You are so into him. If you use the word inconsequential one more time in reference to him, I'll slap you.
Okay. Lexi walks back toward the school, and I take a breath. I spin around and head for my car, pretending not to notice Miller's truck until I'm at my driver's side door. His windows are up, and his truck is running. But he's just sitting in it, staring ahead with a sucker hanging from his mouth. He's not even paying attention to me. He probably doesn't even know he parked next to me, and here I am assuming it was deliberate. I feel stupid. I start to turn around and open my car door, but stop short when he unlocks his passenger door. That's when he lazily turns his head and looks at me expectantly, like I'm supposed to get in his truck. I contemplate it. I like the way I feel around him, so even though I know I shouldn't give him the satisfaction of being able to summon me into his truck with one simple look, I get in his truck anyway. I am that pathetic. When I close the door, it feels as if I've trapped a live wire inside the truck with us. The silence between us only makes the feeling more noticeable.
I can actually feel my heart beating from my stomach all the way up to my throat, as if my heart has swollen to fill my entire torso. Miller's head is resting against his seat. His body is facing forward, but his eyes are on me. I'm looking at him much the same way, but I'm not as relaxed. My back is straight against the leather of his seat. He does have air conditioning, despite what I assumed last time I was in his truck. It's on high, and it's blowing